A new California law forces digital storefronts to state that you don't own any digital content you pay for. Plus, an activist investor wants Ubisoft to be sold to a private equity firm. Tonight is September 29th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
That's right, we're back. Pod Culture says for our weekly hogwash. Yeah, that's probably what we're doing. Actually, this stuff I'm okay with. We're actually, like, it's not, like, the best news, but it's pretty good news. We got some good news tonight. Here, welcome, somewhat good news edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this wonderful Sunday night, welcome. We do tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VOG Network, so you can come join us, interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But this is a podcast, so I understand not everybody can be here on Sunday nights. That's sometimes family time. I totally get it. We do have a Discord server that you can interact with us and suggest stories. Both of the stories we're talking about tonight came from the Discord server. Go to vognetwork.com/discord to get your invite into our server. It's very low traffic. We don't ping people. So it's nice and cozy. I actually am really happy with the community that we have here. Breakman says, good news. So you're not talking about the gaming industry tonight? No, I am. I am. I will also mention, just because some people do know actually where I am located, I am in the Atlanta area. That's in the opener. We are safe here from Hurricane Helene. So Hurricane Helene came and made landfall on Friday. And we were supposed to get the worst of it, and Hurricane Helene veered to the east about 100 miles. So we just got a whole lot of rain. My house, my personal property held up fine. We didn't even lose power. So very thankful for that. We got extremely lucky. I know especially places in western North Carolina, like Boone, North Carolina, and Asheville, North Carolina, got hit extremely hard. And they're still trying to recover. They're still trying to get power back. They're still trying to get water back, that water that you can use, because there's a lot of water around. That's not the type of water you don't want to swim in that water. Trust me, because a lot of it's from the sewer, and you don't want that. But I was able to make it through fine. We're fine. So thankfully, we got extremely, extremely lucky. A lot of families didn't. A lot of people didn't. There are even people that were in the gaming industry that do content creation. They're gone right now because they're trying to figure out how to repair and rebuild. And my hearts go out to them. And I hope that the community pulls through for all of them, because as Mr. Rogers says, you look for the helpers in times like this. S. Turner Matt asks, what about this chemical plant fire that's going on near ATL? So I don't know that much about it. It is a little bit far away from me. And apparently this place has had issues, safety issues, so somebody needs to go check on them. That's a little more official. But from what I understand, I believe the fire has been put out. There's a chemical factory fire east of Atlanta, and it was like even billowing orange smoke, which is never good. Like, they evacuated the area because of it, and I believe now the fire has been put out, so now we're trying to assess the situation to see if people can come back. Breakman says, next week the Bobby Blackwell Show will be under quarantine. That was 4 years ago. We were under quarantine for like 6 months, if you remember. We don't really need to go back to that. That wasn't a lot of fun. Podculture says we lost power for a few hours here. Sorry to hear that. It originally was supposed to come up near where Podculture is. It was originally supposed to like come up, and the eye was supposed to pass over my house. Like that's where we originally were, and then it was supposed to kind of park up in Tennessee and Kentucky for a little bit, and instead it veered east and hit North and South Carolina when they thought they were going to be missing all of it. Hope that if you were affected, hope that things are going as well as they can for you. I do also want to say that after the hurricane came through, I did an appearance on a speedrun event, and I talked about it a little bit last week, and it actually did happen on Friday. However, the only place you can see it is on their YouTube channel, but there was a speedrun race on Multithon Rivals, which is benefiting Blue Path Service Dogs. They train autism service dogs. And we actually raised like $200 during this game. But the game was Dodonko Wonko, which is Japanese for muddy puppy, I learned in my research in preparing to do this commentary. And it is a free game from Bandai Namco. It is available on Steam. It is free. It took me about 40 minutes to complete casually because I played through the game to roll credits. It is the opposite of Power Wash Simulator. You are a Pomeranian and you are trying to destroy the house, essentially, because you've been left alone. Mom is asleep. Dad and the kids went out to get party supplies because the housewarming party is coming up tonight. And so they raced to see how quickly they could get to 100%, get all the collectibles in the game, all the badges, everything like that, and make a whole lot of mess. So that was over on Multithon Rivals. Right now, the only place you can see it is on the video feed over at twitch.tv/multithon. I don't know if they're going to ever upload this to YouTube. They didn't upload their last Multithon content to YouTube, so I didn't find it. So all I can find is the broadcast over on Twitch. Podculture asks, is that mud or something else? So the brown is mud because you start off. I've got a video playing of it on the screen. So you start off with mud because you are left outside and there was a puddle of mud. But since they're moving in, they need to paint the house. So there's paint canisters around. So all the other colors are paint. So you're knocking over the paint canisters and then you roll around in that. And then that becomes your new color. So that's what's going on. It is not something else. It is mud. It is canonically mud. So thank you so much to Selkuthmine and Cubs. I can't legally say his name because I live in Atlanta and I'm a Braves fan. So I legally cannot say his name. So I had to bleep it out. But thank you so much to them for inviting me on to do commentary for this. It was a lot of fun. My first time actually ever doing speedrun commentary. And I did a little bit of research. I played the game. I watched some other runs, and I think we had a lot of fun, and we actually raised like $200. Two $100 donations came in for that during that run, which is a lot for a smaller marathon. You know, we'll talk about like Games Done Quick, which is the big one, and $200, that's like, you know, 2 seconds. But the smaller marathons, if they get, you know, $1,000, that's a lot, and that's kind of what Multithon is. It's a smaller marathon. In fact, they're actually going right now, and if I look at what they're doing right now, so far they have raised $2,325 is what they've raised right now, as of right now, and I think it ends tonight. So this is kind of they're hoping to get $3,000. I think is their hope, that's their goal. Then they get to name one of the dogs. So it's really cool. There is a whole like subculture of like speedrun marathons that are modeled after the Games Done Quick formula. And so there's always opportunity for people to perform and raise money for charity. And so it was really cool to be a part of that. So this week, something came out I thought it was going to be the thing I was really, really looking forward to. But it's really just a precursor, and it's a new DLC for Atari 50. So this is the Digital Eclipse collection of 50 games for Atari's 50th anniversary, and I think originally they had 50 games in it. Now they have way more. But this is the wider world of Atari, And they have 19 games. They have a whole new timeline. They've got more videos, about another 45 minutes worth of videos with, like, the art director, you know, who, you know, designed the packaging for Atari. It shows some of the early concepts of the Atari logo before they settled on the Atari logo that we know. They have stuff about some of their arcade offerings and, you know, things that they didn't put in the original one on there. And it was $7.99, I believe, was the actual price of the DLC. And they had, like, the 19 games. Some of them were really interesting. Some of them I had never heard of. One of them I had, because it was when I bought the Atari 2600 Plus, I had purchased Berserk, which is the updated Berserk that homebrewers did. It was the enhanced edition that added voice, synthesized voice, and, you know, diagonal shooting and things like that. And they actually have this, as well as the original Berserk, as well as the arcade version of Berserk. Those are three of the 19 games. So when they say 19 games, sometimes it's like multiple versions of the same game. But you can actually play all different versions of Berserk, including, I think, one of the home computer versions of Berserk. So I think there's four versions of Berserk. But they have this homebrew, and they have some of the other homebrew stuff. They actually talked lovingly about a man by the name of Kurt Vendel, who was one of the first people I interviewed on this podcast back in 2005. And he was the engineer behind the Atari Flashback 2, which was literally the Atari on a chip. It was not an emulator. It was an actual Atari. And he even put in the solder points where you could add your own cartridge port, because the Atari that existed in 2005 didn't want to have to deal with the customer service complaints of having to support people's old Atari cartridges that had probably been stored in the attic and probably don't work anymore. So, but he gave the actual pinout so you could actually Dremel the case and then add a cartridge port, and then you could actually use a real cartridge port on the Atari Flashback 2. And he included a whole bunch of homebrew games made by the homebrew community on that, like such as Adventure 2, and there were a couple others that were on there. And it talked lovingly about him. Unfortunately, the Atari 50 DLC did not mention that he passed away like 5 or 6 years ago. But they did talk lovingly about him, and I actually had him. I talked to him on the podcast, unfortunately not live. And if people don't remember this, which I don't blame you, it was 2005. It was quite a while ago. And I actually called him on the phone, and I had a device. This was back when we had landlines. So I hadn't switched over to mobile phones yet. I still had a landline. I had a device on the handset that captured the audio of what we were saying, and I recorded it, and it wound up being like a 45-minute interview, so I split it up in two 20-minute chunks, so we wouldn't have to have a whole 45-minute interview in one episode. And we talked about the engineering of Atari, how he was able to get it on one chip. It was really fascinating. And the Breakman asks, 2005, who was sober enough to remember that year? Me. The Breakman also asks, you know, he hearts Desert Falcon, Miner 2049er. I believe Miner 2049er is actually in Atari 50, I want to say. I'm not sure, but I think it was. Is Journey Escape in any of these collections? I don't know. I don't remember off the top of my head all the games that are in Atari 50. There are, they added some new games, like they added like 12 more games for free. And then they added these 19 in these DLC. And then the second DLC that's coming out, and that's what the physical edition is going to have, is actually going to be about the console war between them and Intellivision, because Atari purchased the rights to the Intellivision name and the Intellivision catalog a couple weeks ago. We talked about that. So now they're going to actually include Intellivision games, and they're actually going to talk about the Intellivision rivalry, the first console war. So that is the second DLC. I think that's coming out in November. That's the one I'm really looking forward to see how they handled that. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that were around on the Intellivision side, we have passed away. Keith Robinson passed away, which is why Intellivision was resurrected after that, because Keith Robinson was holding the IP, and then his estate sold it. And that's when we got the Amico and all that stuff. And now Atari, the current version of Atari, owns the rights to Intellivision and most of the catalog. But a lot of the people that were in the Blue Sky Rangers aren't with us anymore. So we lost a lot of that. But one of the things that Atari 50 was doing was that they were using some old interviews. And I know Keith Robinson did a lot of old interviews. And so maybe they can dig some of those up. But they will use archive footage for people who have who've passed away. So I'm really looking forward to that DLC. Let's get into the news that that happened this week, and I'm okay with both of these stories that I'm going to be talking about. This one came across. Both of these were posted on our Discord server. It's the only way I found out about them. So thank you so much to our Discord users. Vognetwork.com/Discord put this up for me. The Verge reports that California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a law to combat disappearing purchases of digital games, movies, music, and ebooks. The legislation will force digital storefronts to tell customers they're just getting a license to use the digital media rather than suggesting that they actually own it. When the law comes into effect next year, it will ban digital storefronts from using terms like buy or purchase unless they inform customers that they're not getting unrestricted access to whatever they're buying. Storefronts will have to tell customers they're getting a license that can be revoked, as well as provide a list of all the restrictions that come along with it. Companies that break the rule could be fined for false advertising. The new law won't apply for stores that offer permanent offline downloads and comes as a direct response to companies like PlayStation and Ubisoft. In April, Ubisoft started deleting the crew from players' accounts after shutting down servers for the online-only game. And last year, Sony said it would remove purchased discovery content from users' PlayStation libraries before walking back the move. So things like GOG won't be affected because GOG allows you to download something that's DRM-free and you can use it whenever, even if GOG shuts down. That's not the case elsewhere. And even though Steam has the kill switch that we all hear about, that doesn't mean that they might not restrict your license to something before Steam goes out of business. California Assemblymember Jackie Irwin said in the press release, quote, as retailers continue to pivot away from selling physical media, the need for customer protections on the purchase of digital media have become increasingly more important. I thank the governor for signing AB 2426, which is the bill we're talking about here, ensuring the false and deceptive advertising from sellers of digital media incorrectly telling customers they own their purchases becomes a thing of the past, unquote. So this is not restricting them from selling that stuff. They just can't say you're buying it. They can't say you're purchasing it. They can say that you're acquiring a license. That's all. It doesn't stop them from doing any of the selling. They just have to put a little bit of text on the screen, which means when California does this, instead of doing it just for California, they're just going to do it everywhere. And that's the power that something a large state like California has, is that it's just easier and cheaper, because really these companies are trying to do things as inexpensively as possible. It's cheaper to just add that language for everybody to satisfy the California law than it is to write the code to check the IP address to see if somebody's in California. And then you got to worry if they're in California and they, for whatever reason, their cell phone says that they're in Nevada for whatever reason, because it's got a wrong geolocation on their IP address, then they could still be like, well, I'm in California. I'm supposed to be seeing this message and I don't. So we're going to start seeing this sometime next year on everything that we buy, even though we're not in California. ZenMonkey11 says, oh, so you're just going to tell us we're screwed. Sounds great. I think I'm only buying from GOG when their site works. This is not changed. Like, this is exactly how it's always been. They just didn't need to disclose that. So Steam or PlayStation, really, is they're going after PlayStation on this. But Steam as well. Steam and PlayStation didn't have to tell you that you were only purchasing a license that could be revoked at any time. They actually say you are buying this game. You are purchasing this game. Now they're just forced to tell you you're purchasing a license that can be revoked at any time. They didn't have to disclose that to you before, but now they do. And ZenMonkey11 says no one reads these days, so they're still going to buy it. And that's fine. Like I said, they're not stopping that. California can't stop that, but they can try to make informed decisions to consumers. And the Breakman says, read, like, without pictures? Like, look, I used to staff an anime convention a long, long time ago. And yes, people can read, but only if it's the text at the bottom of a screen while people are speaking Japanese. That's the only time they can read. They can't read anything else. You put a sign on the door, they don't read it. They just try to barge in anyway, even though the sign says room is closed. Fifth Room says Steam did tell you if you read the giant disclaimer like you swear you did when you click that box. And I think this law means it needs to be more prominent. It needs to be next to the buy button. I believe is what this law is actually saying. So instead of it being on like the next screen, it needs to be on the right near the buy button. So it needs to be more properly shown to you rather than hidden inside of a EULA. And Fifth Remask, GOG, or Good Old Games, I think, I don't know if it's still Good Old Games or if they just said, we're GOG and just deal with it. GOG has no DRM, so you own it, correct? Yes, GOG is very famous for their non-DRM. So they do not have DRM on their stuff, so if you buy it there, you have it. They don't do the CD keys or anything like that. I think maybe like a couple of things on there do, but they do disclose it, so you're going to want to check, because sometimes like... if GOG sells something that needs Ubisoft Uplay, well, there's DRM on it. But GOG, it is supposed to be DRM-free. That is kind of their whole shtick. S. Jaron or Matt says, I need my laws read to me like anime dub voice actors.
This is the United States law, AB 2429.
No, we're not going to do that. I tried. I'm not an anime voice actor. I am not an actor who happens to work in anime. So let's talk about one of the companies that was mentioned in that. This was an interesting story. I saw this one pop up. And this is one of those things that we've been seeing in the gaming industry, but they actually want something else to happen. When we're going to talk about Ubisoft. And Ubisoft has not been doing too well. They haven't been doing too hot recently, either with game releases or with PR, you know, the whole crew thing. And Reuters reports that an activist investor pushing for a sale of Ubisoft has gathered support from 10% of the French video game publisher's shareholders, it said in a letter on Thursday that was exclusively shared with Reuters. So the shareholders that that own, because Ubisoft's a publicly owned company, the shareholders are the ones that really dictate what a company can do. And it is illegal in the United States to do something against the best interests of the shareholders. So that's where you get activist investors, where they come in and they purchase a part of the company and then try to rally the other shareholders to do things that they want to do that maybe the company itself does not want to do. AJ Investments, which has less than 1% stake in Ubisoft, said it was in talks with private equity firms for its push. So they don't want them to sell to Microsoft. They don't want them to sell to EA. They want them to sell to a private equity firm. The Slovakia-based activist investor said in the letter, which was made public, saying, quote, "We call on the management of Ubisoft to allow the sale of the company to third parties or private equity firms at a fair price," unquote. AJ Investments did not name these other investors in the letter and declined a Reuters request for that. The move comes weeks after AJ Investments called for a CEO change at Ubisoft and urged it to go private or be sold. So the company's shares have declined more than 30% so far this month after the letter from AJ Investments dated September 9th and following Ubisoft's announcement that the release of the next Assassin's Creed game would be delayed by 3 months. For the year, the stock is down about 50%, underperforming rivals such as Electronic Arts, Take-Two Interactive Software, and Capcom. Ubisoft shares have underperformed those of other video game publishers owing to weaker spending on its titles. So the Assassin's Creed delay follows a poor run of form in the last 2 years for the family-run publisher, with games such as Skull and Bones and Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, which have fallen short of the expectations of investors and analysts. Ubisoft is run by its founders, the Guillemot family, which owns 15% of the firm, followed by Chinese gaming giant Tencent, which owns just under 10%. The Guillemot family, Ubisoft, and Tencent did not respond for any requests for comment on this. Ubisoft recently released Star Wars Outlaws. It had a strong launch last month, but sales have slowed since then, analysts have said, which, frankly, this is a Reuters article, so it's not written by game people, but that's usually how games are sold, is that they have a strong launch and then sales slow. Like, that's always how it works. Granted, investors don't know that. A lot of investors in companies like this, especially ones that have big enough to own 1% of something, don't care about that part. They are looking at the bottom line and only the bottom line. And what they're saying is that the Guillemot family is really hurting their bottom line. And they feel that a private equity firm could do better. I don't think that's true, because private equity firms are there to make money at make money at any way possible, so that's going to screw over the consumer. And I'm not saying that Ubisoft doesn't already screw over consumer. Look at The Crew. But a private equity firm would ratchet it up. The underperformance has sparked questions about Ubisoft's strategy of launching new licensed intellectual property at a time when gamers are sticking with already proven titles. See, that's the thing right there, is like, the investors are like, why are you trying to do new things when all the consumer wants is another Assassin's Creed, another Far Cry, things like that? Why are you branching out into other things? That's not good for us. Carl Contis, co-founder of the data analytics firm Video Game Insight, says, quote, "The focus should be much more on existing intellectual property and leveraging the strengths they have. It's a risky time to make more than $100 million bets on new IP or licensed IP that haven't proven itself in a game yet," unquote. So basically, the activist investors, remember, 10% of the investors agree with this. So AJ Investments owns 1% of the company, which means that they're allowed to say things like this to other investors, because that you have to own so many shares to be able to do this. And then it turns out 10% of the investors, which I don't know if that includes the 1% or not, it might. So maybe 9% of the other set of investors all agree that Ubisoft is spending too much money on new things that we haven't seen before. And that's not good for their bottom line. That is actively hurting the shareholders' bottom line. AJ Investments said it would speak with Ubisoft's management on Tuesday to discuss the proposals. Questbuster pointed out, interestingly, the letter also CCs Vivendi, who, as some may remember, made a run for Ubisoft in a hostile takeover attempt that lasted a few years and spiked their share price a few years ago during the fight. Vivendi, which was part of Vivendi Universal, and they own Activision? Were they the Activision owners? I can't remember. But yeah, so that was one of the things, and you know, maybe they want Vivendi to come in to buy Ubisoft. Questbuster says Ubisoft has been trying to diversify with extremely mixed results for years, trying to catch up with everyone else. Fifth Dream says, or you know, Assassin's Creed games are always the same every time, just in a new setting. I mean, hey, you can say what you want about that, but last week on this show, I talked about how I love the Like a Dragon series, which used to be called Yakuza, and one of the reasons they were able to make games so quickly, a new AAA title in like 2 years, 3 years, is because they do a lot of asset reuse. And it is the same gameplay, just with a new story. And I love that. So I can't really fault Assassin's Creed for that, if I'm going to be okay with Like a Dragon doing that, where, you know, I boot up Like a Dragon when Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii comes out next year, and I boot it up, and I know where everything is on the map, because the pawn shop's going to be in the same place, the stores are going to be in the same place, the safe house is going to be in the same place, because they reuse a lot of stuff, and Assassin's Creed does that as well. Michigan's here says, personal opinion here, but I feel that the reason Star Wars Outlaws tanked so hard, aside from that, is that a lot of people complain about the stealth being extremely hard. They were supposed to fix it, but I don't know if they ever did. So, yeah, I don't like stealth and stealth in games, so I shut off stealth games that are stealthy-based. So, no, I don't play Metal Gear Solid. I don't want to play Metal Gear Solid, but there's a lot of people that like it. But if it's extremely hard, that's not easy to fix. So there are some things that are just so fundamental to the gameplay that you can't fix it in a patch in like a week. That's because they would break a lot more stuff and it'd make the game even buggier, and we wouldn't stand for that. Questbuster says, yes, Vivendi were part of Activision, ATVI, Activision. The stock ticker was formed out of that before Activision bought itself out from under. Yeah, I think I remember like Vivendi bought Activision and then changed their name to Activision or something like that. And Dark Tatsuya says, the patch was supposed to come out, but we haven't heard anything since the announcement. Once again, things like that, and I know I'm going to start defending Ubisoft, but I'm also a software developer by trade. Making the levels easier is not as simple as you think it would be. And I know I am old enough. I remember the television commercial about where they're like tighten the graphics on level 3 and they went to a mixer and like turned a knob and they're like, ah, that's better. So there is no like magic knob on a mixer that they can say, like, make the stealth easier in Star Wars Outlaws. They actually need to design, how do we make it easier? How do we do it without breaking the game? How, and, you know, be both game balance and the game itself. How do we do all that and then actually going through and actually doing it? And yes, there is testing that's involved. I know you don't believe me when I say that games go through a rigorous QA process. They do. The managers just decide which bugs are actually worthwhile to fix or not. And so it's the management that's like, no, that one's not game breaking. Just leave it in. Because, yes, they do actually go through a very rigorous QA process. And QA does find all the bugs that you think they found. It's just they decide they don't have time to fix those bugs. Questbuster says, I played Outlaws 2. The stealth could have used work. I totally agree. But it had a number of really aggravating technical issues on top of that with some core problems like QTEs, QuickTime events for eating food. Come on. And Dark Tessia says, they claimed 10 days, but that was 3 weeks ago. I guess they didn't realize how much harder that was going to be. Yes, that is very, very likely, because you can say, oh, yeah, it'll be about 10 days. And then you get into it and as a software developer and you realize it's a much larger problem than you thought it was. And it's much more complex than you thought it was. And especially in a game like a AAA title, that is absolutely the case. There are so many systems that were spilled by so many different people that it's very difficult to go in, and 10 days would have been monumental. And I bet you that the engineer said it'd probably take us a couple months, and Ubisoft said, you got 10 days, thinking that, you know, they were going to pull out a miracle in 10 days, and here it is 3 weeks later, and Dark Tetsuya is upset. When I bet you the engineer was like, we told him it'd take a couple months, and they put out a statement saying it was going to take 10 days, and, you know, Fifth Dream says, cough, cough, leave it. Fixing bugs cuts into profits. No, fixing bugs cuts into your release time. And people are already upset that Assassin's Creed is delayed. But you would have been upset if Assassin's Creed wasn't delayed and it was a buggy mess. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say, I don't want things delayed. I don't want things take any more time. I'm ready for it now. Give it to me now. And then also say, well, I want you to fix all the bugs. Every single bug. You can't have both. And the Breakman says, but gamers have to have it both ways. Have you not seen Reddit? Yes, I have seen Reddit. I know about the Reddit. And as Sharon Matt says, we always want it both ways. We hate everything. That's right. You should be a little bit happier. It is so easy to be negative. Especially on the internet. That's the downside of what we've learned over the past 20 years of doing this, is that I tend to assume more noble intent than people like. I assume that there is a noble intent behind things that these companies do. And that's hard for a lot of people to do, because they just assume that there's all these vast conspiracies that this company is trying to target them personally. And no, they're not. They're not that competent. Questbush says, I enjoyed Outlaws when it worked, and I really wanted to love it, but it felt like it definitely needed a few more months in the oven. But I bet Star Wars needed that to come out. That's why it's interesting, like, all the people that are always negative, like, getting to experience Astrobot and trying to find reasons to hate it, and they're having a hard time finding reasons to hate it. And it's a fantastic little game. I did finally get to play Astrobot a little bit. I finally got it. And I played it last night when three of my sports teams were playing at once. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go play Astrobot instead of watching any of those sports. Good decision, by the way. And I finally played it. And it is very enjoyable. It's a really enjoyable platformer. It is the next evolution of Astro's Playroom. So if you have a PlayStation 5, you have Astro's Playroom. Give it a shot. And I love it. And it's got just enough PlayStation nostalgia. And that's the thing people rail on Astrobot about, is it's too much PlayStation nostalgia, apparently. And it leans a little, they think it leans too heavily into the PlayStation brand, because your spaceship is a PS5, you know, and they're, which is, Astro's Playroom was all PlayStation nostalgia. And they're like, you know, that's bad, blah, blah, blah. Mario games lean into the Nintendo nostalgia, and we love that. Everybody loves it. Like, Mario Kart is Nintendo nostalgia right there. And Sony is doing that for their characters because they have a long line of characters. Now, there's a lot of third parties in there, so there's not that many that Sony own, and some of these characters have appeared on other consoles now, but they were very formative in PlayStation's early and even later years because they've got a reference to Horizon Zero Dawn in it. And this is leaning into that the same way that Nintendo leans on their properties when making a Mario Kart or a Smash Brothers, while still having its own kind of charm and its own feel and making Astrobot its own character in its own universe. They're just all Astrobots that dress up as PlayStation characters. Dark Sakura in chat says, one should always be critical of what they love. And I agree with that. But where I differ personally is that there is critical in order to be negative, or critical with looking at noble intent and assuming noble intent. It's really hard to do the second one. It's so easy to just be like, I'm going to be critical and I'm going to, you know, curse up a storm and say that everybody sucks and nobody knows how to make games anymore. And I'm the only one that knows how to make games, but I'm not smart enough to make games because they're keeping me down and hooray AI. But I am trying not to be that. And I've been that in the past. Dark Sakura says, one shouldn't confuse negativity or hate with actual constructive criticism. And I wish more content creators did constructive criticism. Obviously, the ones at Vogue do. But, like, it's hard to find somebody who is not always negative about things. Because guess what? Negativity drives clicks. Fifthream says, yeah, when I'm critical, I start it with, it would be cool if... ... and then add what a good improvement or addition would be. But that doesn't make you money. But the good thing is I don't need to make money for this. But anyway, Astrobot, I got on, you know, went on a tangent a little bit. Astrobot's great. I went through the first of like six worlds or universes or whatever. And it's great. It's a lot of fun. And I think that it is larger in scope than Astro's Playroom. You should absolutely play Astro's Playroom first if you have a PS5, because Astrobot's only on the PS5, but you get it free. Play it first, see if you like it, and then I do believe that this game is worth the, what is it, $49.99, $59.99. It's not a $20 game, but it is going to be a 10 to 15 hour experience. It's not a short one. Questbush says, I'm hoping to pick up Astrobot at some point. It looks like just a joy to play. And it is. It's refreshing to see a game like that come out of PlayStation, because I watched the state of play and it started with Astrobot and the free update that's going to be happening later on this year. And then every single game after it was a dark, dreary, cinematic, emotional, scary experience. That's everything that's coming out of PlayStation. And then they're like, oh, Shredder's Revenge is going to have some DLC. But most of the stuff that they were showing was of the horror variety, or, you know, the apocalyptic variety, because that's the type of content that people are making right now, and those sell really well. And there's not anything else coming out that's like Astrobot from the PlayStation side of things. S. General Matt says, the parts I've seen of Astrobot, the small nods to old Sony titles are cute. They're not just small nods. Like, there's a lot to it, but it is. And Astro's Playroom was the same way. I think Astro's Playroom was a little bit more in your face with the Sony nostalgia, but Astrobot absolutely still has a lot of the Sony nostalgia in it. Yeah, the Breakman says, unless the world ends, no one cares. And Fistream says, no apocalypse, no buy. I did also try, there was a demo came out of from Atlas, speaking of apocalypse, right? Of Metaphor Refantasio. So this demo is out now. The game comes out sometime next month. And this is from the Persona team, and it is a turn-based RPG. That is, essentially, it's like they got some elements of Persona in it, but it was kind of interesting. It was, I haven't finished the whole prologue yet, but the interesting thing about the narrative in what Mike Def says, New Sona, I see what you did there, is it treats us as actually existing. And this is not really a spoiler because it's like the first thing in the prologue, but it actually asks you your name. And it is very specific in saying, I'm talking about you, the person who's looking at me or looking into this window, into this world. And it says, you'll name the protagonist later. It actually wants your name and what you want to be called, as in, you are this person looking into a window, and I don't know why I can sense your presence, but you're here. And then you name the protagonist later. And then it goes through and it actually talks about, like, this. He's reading a book that's a fantasy world, and it's describing our world. It's describing us. And the enemies in the game are called humans, which was kind of interesting. And they don't look like what we consider to be humans, but to them, they're all humans. So it's going to be real interesting to see where they go with that. And I don't think they answer that in the prologue. Michigan says the demo, I believe, is supposedly 4 hours long. I think I'm an hour and a half into the demo, and that's when I saved it and had to leave. I was tired. I needed to sleep. The Breakman asked, does it say your name like Fallout 4 did? I don't know if it does. It has not referenced that name yet in my playthrough. But it does not say the name of the character. So if you put in the name of the character, it doesn't say their name. I don't think Atlas is like that, like what Bethesda would do there. As Sherry Matt says, we did get a Lunar Remaster Collection. I'm excited about that. I have Lunar the Silver Star for Sega CD and never did finish it, but I started it multiple times back in the 90s. Questbutter says it took me nearly 10 hours to complete the demo of Refantasio, but I'm the kind that likes to explore and do as much as I can before I hit the hard finish. So yeah, it's not going to take you 10 hours. So we're going to take a very quick music break, and then we will talk to OLR now that they are back, we will see what else is what other critiques we can have of the gaming industry. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're in the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
This is Professor Shy Guy participating with the Bobby Blackwolf Show.
Professor Shy Guy, he actually still does some performing. He's still around. He's kind of branched out from the chiptune stuff, but he's still, you can check him out at some of your favorite conventions. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to be a touring musician in the geek space. All you got to do is send me an MP3 of just your voice or a video of just you with your voice, and I'll choose which DMCA violation I want to put behind it. And talking about us coming back to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Questbuster during the break, because I mentioned all the post-apocalyptic, dreary stuff like that. Questbuster actually said, also, when Bobby mentioned dreary and gray post-apocalyptic games, I can suggest one that is actually bright, colorful, and relaxing called Caravan Sandwich, if anyone's interested in something different. And so I had not heard of this, but I looked it up, and it is a very bright, looks, you know, like it's got cel-shaded vibes. So it looks a little bit like the graphical, I'm trying to describe it to the people that are not able to see this, you know, polygonal, bright, you know, maybe like Sunset Overdrive-ish, that type of art style, or maybe Jet Set Radio, that type of art style, just in general. But you're in a post-apocalyptic world that's very, it's a lot of sand everywhere, but now we're in, like, colorful stuff. So apparently it's, pretty cozy. Questbutter says, your sister has gone missing, so you're trying to find out what happened to them, and along the way interact with NPCs who want to help out, explore, solve puzzles, and generally explore at your own pace. It's a post-apocalyptic world, so everyone's living more or less with whatever is on hand. But it's like the apocalypse happened so long ago that everyone now just enjoys living day to day. There's no dying or even pressure to succeed. You just explore at your own place and roam around in your cool van. All right. So it's Bobby Blackwolf mode for everybody is the way that I kind of get this, get the sense from this. So it is on, I saw it on Steam. I don't know exactly what all the platforms it is on because I just heard about this and Googled it real quick during the break. And ZenMonkey11 says, I thought you were a DoorDash driver. No, that's Death Stranding is where you're a DoorDash driver. And by the way, it is spelled S-A-N-D-W-I-T-C-H. It is on Steam, Epic Game Store, PS5, and Nintendo Switch. Sorry, Xbox, you get nothing. So there is your game recommendation from Questbuster. If you want in a post-apocalyptic game that is not zombies and dreary and all things like that, and it is currently, how much does it cost? It is currently $24.99 on Steam. And it apparently came out very recently. It came out September 12th. So it's only a couple weeks old. So you can get it there on Steam for $24.99 and also on some of those other platforms. And now everybody wants a sandwich. I can't help you with that, unfortunately. Dark Tessia says, well, maybe there's food delivery in Death Stranding 2. Who knows? There was food delivery in Death Stranding 1. Like, you don't know what was in those boxes. So, coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And we like to check in with them to see what's going on and see how it's been. It's been a bit since we've had OLR. So we like to check in with them and see what's going on. So, Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. Discord changed the interface slightly, so I got kind of scared. But
yes, that was happening to me too.
Yeah. So welcome back. How was your stuff last week?
It was good. I went to Seattle. Yeah. My co-host went to TwitchCon, so we will definitely be talking about TwitchCon with Dark Soccer and Loki a little later on this evening. I went to Seattle. I was kind of there for Ingress, one of the games I play that I talk about a lot on the show. You all know I'm into location and GPS-based gaming, the most popular of which, of course, is Pokemon Go. Yep. There's a lot of those types of games, and you know, long story long, Ingress was the game that Niantic made before Pokemon Go, but it's a little more player versus player. In fact, it's a lot more player versus player, and so they do these big events in cities called Anomalies, what they're called, and Seattle hosted one of these. And, you know, it was a nice excuse to go up to Seattle and see some friends I have that are up there and kind of make a whole trip of it. Unfortunately, when that was announced, I kind of booked it without realizing, oh, TwitchCon is going to be the same weekend. So I guess I've made that decision. But Alan and I kind of knew we were going to sit out TwitchCon this year anyway, after Vegas last year was not a pleasant experience. Even though it moved back to San Diego, I think Vegas was so bad, we took a year off.
Yeah, and see, I didn't mind it.
Confirmed for San Diego 2025.
Yeah, see, and I didn't mind the Vegas as much just because I had never been to Vegas. And so I kind of used it as that. But I also saw the problems with it and, you know, because with the F1 race and all that other stuff. And just, it's not the town for that kind of thing.
And to think your Vegas experience could have been even better your first time.
So. I still need to get back out there just normally.
Yes,
you know, to see stuff, you know,
for sure.
So yeah, so I wanted to see. Did you ever get the Atari 50 collection from Digital Eclipse? I think you did at some point.
I did. I bought it on like whatever the first sale was. Yeah. When it went on sale, kind of realizing, oh, I don't have this. So I do have a digital license. Mm-hmm. I guess we're going to say now to access Atari 50 until they decide I can't anymore. But yes, I acquired my digital license. Some time ago. Yeah, and it's a great collection. I mean, it really is the Gold Master Series Volume 0.
Yeah.
It was really the footprint for what came after it with, you know, the Karateka and Jeff Minter and then soon to be the Tetris collection as well. I think before the end of this, if that's this year or early 2025.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't either.
One of the things that was interesting in this new DLC is that it really actually does spend about half of the new videos in the DLC talking about the community, because Atari bought Atari Age, the forum. But they still have Albert Yaruso, who was the forum owner and stuff. Like, he started it back in like 1990 something, like 99, 98. Mm-hmm. And he's still there. So they actually had him and some other homebrew people actually talk about the homebrew of Atari and about how Atari really didn't acknowledge their presence for like 15 years or so, and now they're all into it. The interesting thing that I learned is that Mike Mika, who is the head of Digital Eclipse, started off as an Atari homebrew programmer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That either until he was in there. And he actually was the one, the Berserk that I have, that's the enhanced edition that has the sound. That was him. He did. He put the sound in for the first time in like 2001, 2002. Then the community took it over and added some other things to it because it was open source. But the head of Digital Eclipse started out as an Atari homebrewer, which kind of tells you a little bit of why Digital Eclipse is the way it is. Because that's where they came
why
from.
Why they've included the homebrew community in this, which but it's worthy. It's that's pretty cool. I'll definitely check out the DLC for sure.
Yeah,
I'm kind of waiting for the combined. You know, when they have the other part as well. But yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, so the combined that comes out later, and that's when they start including Intellivision. That's the one that's going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm, you know, in wrestling terms,
living together. Yep.
Yeah, in wrestling terms, this is like when Vince McMahon bought WCW, and we're waiting for them to show up together, and that's the second DLC.
This is playing the Sega Genesis collection on your Nintendo Switch.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and but also like having all the videos about, because this DLC does add like good to 30 minutes worth of videos and interviews. Mm-hmm. And so the next one I'm thinking will as well, and talk about the Intellivision stuff and even have some of the Intellivision games on there, I think. I don't know.
Well, you know, 30 minutes worth of interviews, though, is not a novel and new thing for video games, because, you know, one of the greatest video games of all time had 30 minutes worth of video and interviews in it. And I'm talking about Spice World for the PS1.
I mean, Night Trap had 30 minutes of videos and interviews. It was just all of, you know, girls screaming.
Yeah, I don't know if it was interviews or community theater, somewhere in between. Yeah.
So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight here on your triumphant return?
Well, it's Tokyo Game Show, so let's talk a little bit about some of the things that Microsoft actually probably came out swinging a little bit at Tokyo Game Show. So we'll talk about that, including a series that people have been waiting for a very long time on Xbox is finally out on Xbox. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Sony. Even though technically they did not do a Tokyo Game Show event, they did a State of Play, oddly timed, right at the same time as Tokyo Game Show. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Nintendo didn't announce anything. But finally, Bobby, finally, it only took, 8 months for it to finally happen? Hmm. They went after Pal World. We're going to talk all about that tonight.
Yep. And I will also show, because I know y'all weren't here last week, I did last week show that I did finally get the Hallmark Christmas ornament of the game console for this year. And this year it is Xbox. And when you hit the button, the green light comes on. And it plays the, which you probably will not be able to hear it on Discord, but it plays the opening, like that, you know, the Xbox opening sound, and then it goes into Halo. Yeah. So
That's cool.
But all that lights up is the power button on the very front. That's all that lights up on it, which is kind of par for the course. The Dreamcast, only the little red thing lit up. This was the keepsake ornament for this year. And Hallmark, I went in there, and Hallmark's really going after the geek crowd because we have money. And the Sonic the Hedgehog one was really interesting. It was a little bit too big, but it actually is like has Sonic inside the loop, and you press the button and it lights up, and Sonic actually goes around the loop and collects the rings.
Wow!
It's if you have a Hallmark store near you, go to it and press the button and see what it does. It wasn't enough for me to buy it.
This is not the Hallmark store my mother used to shop at. No.
They learned that you and I have money and we like to spend it on things.
You know what, though? Other companies should take note.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, if that really is the case, that Hallmark is evolving with the times and realizing that the customer base is changing, too. Honestly, good for them. Good for them.
Yeah. So Orange Lounge Radio is coming up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. S-Jernomat says the Braves have to win just one game tomorrow. Well, guess what? I'm going to both because I had tickets to the Thursday night game that got rained out because of the hurricane. And so I'm going to be out and hopefully won't be disappointed when I'm there in person. And they were free because I was going with my company. So they were taking us all to the Braves game on Thursday night. I think it rained out. So that's my tomorrow. And Pod Culture in chat is talking about the TARDIS from last year was very pricey. I did get the TARDIS. We do have the little TARDIS from Hallmark that actually like spins around and everything. We did get that. So, so that's it from us. I am on social media at Bobby Blackwolf or at BobbyBlackwolf.com on Blue Sky. Please go follow on Blue Sky. I really need to get on Instagram. That's what I've learned. Everybody's like, oh, I, you know, they meet me and they're like, I followed you on Instagram. I'm like, great, the one I don't use. But at Bobby Blackwolf there, BobbyBlackwolf.com or VogNetwork.com/Discord is our Discord server. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone the show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But that's it. That is it for the show tonight. I'm going to go ahead and hit the button so we can get out of here. So, maybe I'll... Hopefully tomorrow will go better with sports than last night did. Let's just say that way. I'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.